Day four. Wow, we made it to the halfway point. We finished day three yesterday. We're starting day four today. And today we're going to be talking about client-side vulnerability discovery. Wow. Now, I will tell you that this is a topic that we find that most people have not dealt with very much, right? And so we've got some interesting things to talk about today. We've got a range of topics. We're going to start with what is client-side vulnerability discovery, right? And the way this starts, the way we need to understand this, is that we are going to talk about the use of client technologies within an application that weakens the application, right? I want to be very clear here. We are not discussing, oh my gosh, there's a flaw in WebKit. Oh my gosh, Flash Player is vulnerable to a zero day. Here's how we discover how to attack Adobe Reader. Here's how we're not talking about that, right? I'm sorry? You use it is the right answer for how to attack Adobe Reader. That's a completely different class. It's a completely different topic. When we are talking about web pen testing, we are talking about the weaknesses in the applications, right? That I do like to use. I'm going to steal that if you don't mind. Thanks. We will talk about technologies like Flash. We will talk about Java, right? We'll talk about Ajaxification of things. We'll talk about web services, right? The one thing I want to be very clear on. When you're doing a pen test, you may reference client vulnerabilities, right? So we say we're not going to talk about how to find a zero day in IE, right? Again, it's pretty simple, right? But in a finding, we may reference it. For example, I'm doing a test. The website allows autocomplete of passwords and requires the user to run Internet Explorer 7, right? Or Internet Explorer 6. In that case, I'm going to say autocomplete of passwords is a bad idea. But I consider autocomplete of passwords a low-risk finding unless there's a compliance requirement that requires you not to have it, right? Like PCI or something like that. But by itself, I think autocomplete is a low-risk finding to the application. My opinion, you may disagree. And if you do, I'd love to hear it, right? But if your application requires the use of IE6, a very vulnerable web browser, well, now you just raise the severity of autocomplete to a medium, at least. Because you're forcing them to use a browser that is vulnerable and then allowing them to save their password in that browser. Make sense? It raises the vulnerability criticality, the risk of that. Or there's a, how do I say this? I'm trying to figure out how to anonymize this enough. So I was doing some work with a smart grid vendor that had a head-end device. This is an appliance. The head-end is what manages a lot of, I'm trying to be vague enough, controls the system. It's where the monitoring, you know, they connect to the head-end to deal with everything, you know, the distribution and stuff like that. I think that's a vague enough description, right? This is the problem we get into, right? If I go, well, you know, you go here and here and here. Well, so this application, a web application, it required you to run Internet Explorer 5. Yes. By the way, this was in 2011 I was testing this, just to give you a reference time frame, right? I'm sorry? Oh, yeah, I really said 5. Yeah, but it gets better. Would you agree that IE5 is probably one of the most vulnerable browsers out there, right? So if you went to, I actually had to download and install a VM to have IE5, right? I just did the default. I did the install. I wasn't allowed to patch it. And I browsed to the web page, and it popped up and said, because it was trying to install some ActiveX components, right? And it popped up and said, we need you to make some security settings changes, because your security is set too high for our application to work. So not only were they requiring us to use a browser that was amazingly vulnerable, but even at its default amazingly vulnerableness, it was too secure for their application to function, right? I'm sorry? Yeah, I hesitate to call it the smart grid at that point, right? I mean, I don't know what to call it. I mean, without being truly offensive, I could come up with some names, right? We'll call it the grid because this is the same smart grid vendor that I asked them if they would let me have a copy, you know, one of their head-end devices for class. And they actually asked me if it was because it was so secure. And I said, no, because you've implemented every vulnerability we teach. So we could just do every exercise against your device. No, they didn't get, can you believe that? It's so rude of them. They wouldn't let me use it. As a matter of fact, they even wouldn't let me tell you their name. So. But, so in that case, right, we would actually write in the findings use of IE5 in the security settings weaken the security of your organization, right? So we will reference these types of vulnerabilities when we talk. We just won't go in, like as part of the pen test, I'm not gonna find a zero day in Chrome, typically. Make sense? Okay, understand the difference between what we're talking about and that. Which brings us to Ajax. Ajax. I love Ajax. Asynchronous JavaScript and XML. It's always fun, right? People have decided that their website needs to be a thick client, right? We can't have this traditional click a link, go make a request, get the response, redraw the entire page. No. We want the application to react, move, change, flow. For the longest time, you know how you could tell it was a Web 2.0 site? Just by the domain name. You know it's gonna be a joke, right? It's either missing a vowel or has too many consonants. Dig, right? Flickr, just, they drop the E, they add an extra G. That's how you could tell. You would see a domain name and go, okay, Web 2.0. And you know why? All the good domains were taken. Heck, I'm still trying to get secureideas.com, right? Some guys had a website out there broken for 5 years. You go to the website, it says PHP nuke error, and I get emails from people. I always get a kick out of it because they go to the wrong domain in the browser, but they email the right domain and their email addresses. And they'll say, your website's broken. And we go, Jack, nope, not mine. So Ajax is out there. And one of the things that we find is that Ajax changes the way we approach our test. Ajax affects how we do the steps in our methodology. It affects the way our test runs. Which could be good, could be bad, but if we're not prepared for it. And I do find way too many pen testers, and I hope you heard the quotes around the word, right? Too many pen testers. If they don't understand the technology or they don't know how to deal with it, they just ignore it, right? We especially see that with web services, which we'll talk about next, right? Oh, I don't know how to test web services, so it must not be vulnerable. And because they find so many other flaws, just low-hanging fruit, nobody seems to notice that they didn't test a major part of the application. Same thing with Ajax. I don't know how to deal with the XHR request objects. I don't know how to deal with the responses coming back. Jason, right? And so we ignore it. And that's probably not the best idea. I mean, if I had to guess, that's what I would say, right? Mashups, we talked about Ajax, you know, how it works on day one. But one of the things we see a lot is the mashup idea. I'm gonna take content from here, content from there, content from way over there, and I'm gonna pull it all together into one website and call it original. I need a website that shows you a map of the earth. Using Google Map, dropping pins where all the Facebook profiles we're interested in are located, and then if you click the pin, you get to see pictures from Flickr that are from that area. That would be a mashup, right? I want to take this data from here and this data from here and present it. We used to, for a while there, portals were the big topic. Can you administer a portal server? Can you develop a portlet? I knew that right the minute that we started calling pieces of it portlets, which immediately makes you pronounce portalet, which is right, not something you want on, I'm a portlet engineer. No, no, portlet engineer. Well, which one is it? Did you engineer the portal server's widget or the outdoor toilet? You know, that combination is just hard. So we moved away from the portlets, which were fun. Rather not talk about attacking portlets. You know, if you ever tip a portlet, you want to tip it door down, but you want to make sure it's empty before you do it. Or not. But, stupid teenager. Me. These mashups are very common. And one of the things that we see is that mashups use proxy capabilities, right? They're going to build that into the application. Why? Because of the same origin. Same origin blocks the ability. If I wanted to do a mashup by having Ed's evil server dump code down to the browser, and that code down to the browser would load JavaScript that would retrieve content and try to display it, that will fail. Because the JavaScript from Ed's evil server cannot access, the content of the response, right? Same origin policy blocks that. We talked about this on day one. This is a very critical thing to understand when we're doing cross-site scripting and when we're evaluating Web 2.0. So what we see them do is they build in proxy capabilities. I want to be very clear here. We are not talking about them putting ISA server here or Squid server, right? We are talking about them building into the application the ability for the application to accept a request, have a parameter that tells it where to go get the content. It gets the content, brings it back. So it is now a client to that backend server. It parses the response and mashes it together with the other responses or the other data it wants to display. That is a mashup server. That is the proxying capability we're talking about, and that is a focus of our attack as we're looking at these applications. Why? Well, because if I can control where that server goes out and gets its content, don't I win? Right? I can get it to get other content. And by having it retrieve the content, I, one, bypass same origin, and two, potentially bypass controls. Like, for example, if you have built proxy capabilities into your application, I'm going to have it retrieve 127.0.0.1. Because many of these Web 2.0 sites, right, they have administrative consoles behind them. They have control systems behind them that are locked down to the local network. This can only be accessed by the administrator. Okay. But if your application will proxy my request there, it will look like it's coming from the local network. Can you say win? Right? It's a good word to say. I will tell you, you should all practice it because you will be saying it a lot as you do web pen testing. Right? And net worth. Yeah, there you go. No problem. Do you plan on winning tonight? You don't plan on winning. How do you not plan on winning? Are you not competing? No, then plan on winning. No. I'm a very firm believer in this. Start the way you plan on ending. With pen testing and everything that we do. I don't mean to be moral or pithy sayings or whatever. But if you begin the test with the mindset of how you're going to finish it, you have a better chance of finishing it that way. So if you sit down and say, I might win, you're not going to win. Not to be mean, but you have less chance. If you sit down and say, damn it, this is mine. I'm getting a shell. I'm making it to level 12 or whatever level they go to, because my speakers go to 11. But you got to make the plan, right? Look at Tim. Tim sat down. He was a young snot-nosed pen tester. When he did his first Net Wars, what? He was a young snot-nosed pen tester wannabe, right? You know how sad it is to be a snot-nosed pen tester wannabe? And he made the mistake of sitting right there in class. Yeah, because you know, when I stand, this is where you two are in trouble. because you were the two I'm standing next to. So, you know, it's like, you're going to be my example. And with him, he had stuff running down his face. It was gross, right? No, I know it hasn't changed. But then, at least, now he's a real pen tester that's just snot-nosed. But, yes, this is being recorded. All the online students are thinking, Tim Tones, Landmaster 53, snot-nosed pen tester. Do you want his email address? It's snotnose@blackhillsecuritygroup. But John will have the email alias set up tonight. So when we start dealing with all this stuff, right, as we start dealing with these proxy servers, we want to start attacking this. And what are the main issues? The main issue is control of that URL, right? If I can change the URL it's going to, this is a win. I'll give you an example of one that you can't attack. Can't attack it because I'm not giving you permission to. But I will tell you that I believe that this is as secure as it needs to be, as secure as we can make it. Are there ways to attack it? Yes, absolutely. I know of at least three ways. But if you go out to secureideas.net, right on the front page of the site, there is a feed of our Twitter posts. Right? Why? Because I'm lazy and I don't want to post news items in more than one place. Right? I'll admit the laziness. So our application, when you hit it, it actually does a request out to Twitter. Very similar to what we're describing here with this proxy capability. Makes the request, it gets the response, it parses it, and it makes it part of its response to the user. Now, in this case, you can't control the URL. Why? Because it's hard-coded in the application. Yeah, if you got control of the server, you could change it. Okay, but if you get control of that server, I've already lost, right? Two, you could poison DNS around it, right, and go after it that way. But there is no parameter from the user that sets the URL. So while we are proxying, we're not allowing the user to control it. This is not very useful for the majority of proxy type setups. Why? Because the reason they want to proxy is to allow the user to say, I want to go see this Twitter profile, or this Facebook profile, or this website, right? In those cases, you're going to see parameters from the user. Sometimes that parameter is going to be a full URL, right? If it is, I'm sure you can know how to attack that, right? Change the URL. But in other ones, it's just going to be a parameter, like the name. Instead of it being @SecureIdeasLLC, right? You know, instead of it being twitter.com/@SecureIdeasLLC, it's just SecureIdeasLLC. And they'll go out to twitter.com and append the profile name at the end. And that'll load that profile. Now that means that I can actually change that, right? Instead of going to @SecureIdeasLLC, I could go to Black Hills Security Group, right? Now I'm loading their Twitter profile on my production website. If this was a vulnerability you could do there, right? Now, is that bad? I don't know. Reputationally, I think it would hurt my company to have somebody figure out a way to display somebody else's Twitter feed, right? How embarrassing it would be for my company, considering the fact I have government contracts, I have military contracts, I have corporate contracts, if somebody redirected my website to load the anonymous news Twitter feed, as an example, right? But what happens if they loaded a feed that wasn't Twitter at all, but was PHP code that my site then processed and ran on my server, right? That's another potential. Now, sometimes you can just change the name and it'll go there. There's another attack you can do. You guys remember when we talked about URIs? We talked about the fact that there was a protocol, then there was an optional username, colon, password, @, and then the domain name, right? So if my site's going to http://www.twitter.com/something, what would stop you from appending the @exploits.secureideas.net/something? Now, when I make the web request, the www.twitter.com is treated as a username with a blank password. Since exploits.secureideas.net doesn't require a username, it ignores it. But you've changed the entire place the site has gone, right? Just by throwing in an at symbol, or maybe a colon fake password at, and then a new domain, right? The web client now sees the beginning part instead of as a domain as the password, username and password, right? We can control things this way. This is the type of stuff we want to do. Another thing we see is that sometimes the application will use what we call a check string, a checksum, right? It'll say, here's the URL, check ID equals 12. And what they're supposed to do, if that's implemented correctly, is they're supposed to look up that URL in a table they've got, maybe in memory, maybe in a database, maybe in a flat file. And they say, okay, it's check ID 12, and we're going out to twitter.com. Do those match? Yes, they do. Great, we weren't attacked. Two things happen there. One, if you do that little at symbol trick, a lot of the check strings will fail because they will still see that the beginning of it is twitter.com, right? And say, oh, okay, we're fine. The other thing is that we find that most organizations, even if they roll out that check string, ignore it. And the reason they ignore it is either we can leave it blank and they just process anyways because the check string is blank, or they're rolling out new URLs they want people to be able to access faster than the developers can push new code to add the URLs to the database or add the URLs to the table or the flat file, right? And so they disable the check string so that their application works the way they want it to. So just because you see the check string there doesn't mean it's being validated. You need to test that. Make sense? Okay, so that's one of the types of things that we do with AJAX. Another thing is script tags, cross-site scripting. By the way, this is referred to as DOM-based XSS when we talk about script tags. We see a lot of times where the site will have a script tag on it, and then within that script tag, they'll use stuff from the URI or from the request. This is very, very common in analytics software, right? Think Google Analytics. Now, Google Analytics is not vulnerable to this currently, but Omniture is. You know the Omniture web logging system, right? They allow, if you've implemented it in this one way that they used to support and don't anymore, but they haven't forced all their customers to change, on the page is a script tag, and the script does a document.write, and it writes part of the URL. So if you put an arbitrary parameter that the application isn't going to pay any attention to because the application's not looking for it, so it's not filtering it, it's not protecting it, but then when the script tag is displayed, it does the document.write, and it reads that arbitrary tag in because it's part of the URL, and it displays it to the page, right? That allows us to interact with the content of the page because it doesn't violate same origin. It's the web page is loading it into the DOM, right? That's a fun attack. And we don't have to worry about having to get the script tag there because it's already on the page. It's already using it, right? So those are two different interesting ideas. But now let's start talking about the effect on our system, the effect on our test. And the first thing we want to talk about is attack surface. Now, this is one of those points that many people disagree on. Some people say that AJAX offers this huge attack surface over normal traditional applications. And other people say there's no new attack surface. As a matter of fact, this is one of the debates that I've had with Jeremiah Grossman, right? We were on a panel and we were talking. We talked about this on Twitter, right? And after having the conversation, during the conversation, he and I disagreed. After having the conversation, I realized, and my understanding is so is he, we actually agreed with each other. We were just saying it differently. When he says there's no new attack surface, what he's saying is there's no new attack. There isn't an AJAX CSS or AJAX XSS or you're right. Cross-site scripting is the same thing whether it's AJAX or non-AJAX sites, so there's no new attack surface from that perspective. But on my perspective, which he happens to agree with and we just debated it, is we've moved so much of the business logic and so much of the processing to the client that there's more things the attacker can do. There's more pieces. Whereas previously, you would make a web request, the web request would go up to the server, and a whole bunch of processing would happen on the server, and then you'd get a response. Now, and you could only attack the input and then receive the output, right? Now, all of that processing got moved to my machine. Guess what I control on my machine? Everything. It's my machine. So I have a bigger attack surface because there's more places I can poke. There's more places I can prod. There's more things I can change. I personally like Ajax a lot, right? So we can start talking about this. One of the things that I should have mentioned that I really like is that Ajax really seems to be architected to be vulnerable to cross-site request forgery, right? I mean, seriously, right? We push everything down to the client, the processing happens in the client, and then we submit a request. Okay, here you go. And in so many cases, that request is a very simplistic, predictable transaction that just requires the user to have an active session. Isn't that what we described as cross-site request forgery? It's also how Ajax is described, right? So mapping. As we start to deal with the mapping phase, we start to have issues. We start to have problems. This is where one of the initial problems with our tools start to happen. Now, you notice I skipped recon. Ajax has no impact on recon. Why? Because we're not talking to the website target at all anyways, right? Now, I will go so far as to say that if your search engine has decided to Ajaxify itself, that may break some of your search engine crawling tools, but that's totally a different issue than what we're talking about here, right? But when we start to move over to let's talk to the application, when we start to move over to let's deal with our target, let's start to parse the application stuff, let's start to deal with what's going on, Ajax starts to break some of our tools. We talked about spidering yesterday. I'm sorry, the day before, right? Many of the spidering tools, as a matter of fact, almost all of the spidering tools we discussed can't handle Ajax code. So they're gonna have problems spidering the application. Our automated tools from yesterday morning are gonna have problems spidering the application. They don't know how to deal with the client-side logic. And so our application map can only be built with more manual work. So when you're scoping a test, that's something you need to think about. That's something you need to evaluate. That's something you need to take into account time frame wise, because I will tell you right now that the majority of pen testers out there will take longer to build an application map if they don't have the automated tools helping them. So when you scope the test, figure that in. Remember I said, right, 10%? Maybe you bump it to 15, maybe you bump it to 20. So instead of half a day of a 5-day test, it's a full day, right? I don't know. It's up to you as to how you want to handle that, right? It's up to you as to how fast you can work. And keep in mind that when we talk about scoping, that's internal and external, right? I don't care if you're a consultant or an employee, you have to determine scope of your application test. You have to determine the timing because nobody that I know of ever gets a test that is, keep going. Track your time, let me know at the end of the year how much I owe you, and just keep testing. I've never had somebody say that to me, ever, ever. By the way, if you know anybody who wants to say that to somebody, 904-403-8024. But it doesn't happen. Even when I was an internal guy that was doing testing of applications, right? There was a project plan, Gantt, right? How many people have Gantt charts coming out their ears? Here's your milestone, your major milestone, your minor milestone, Six Sigma! We have to go to production at some point, right? Oh, I'm sorry, security's not done. How long is it gonna take? About a decade. Oh, you're developing at the same time I'm testing? Ooh, 20 years. Right? Because that is a problem with testing, right? You know how irritated I get when I'm testing an application, and I start Monday morning, I start working on the test, then Tuesday night, I start banging up against some stuff, and then Wednesday morning, I start to go back and look at some of the things I looked at before, and they're gone. I call up, oh yeah, we did a deployment of new code last night. How much did you change? Oh, all of it. This is a brand new version. This is our 3.0 version. So everything I did on Monday and Tuesday is trash? Oh no, I'm sure you could use some of it. Right? So mapping changes because of Ajax. Mapping has to be dealt with. Right? Discovery, same thing. As we start to look for vulnerabilities, as we start to look for finding the issues with our application, Ajax throws off the discovery tools. Why? Because the discovery tools have to be able to find the pages. They have to find the requests. They have to be able to manage this. Think about W3F, right? It spiders the app, then tries to find the flaws. If it doesn't know how to process the client-side code, if it doesn't know how to deal with all that Ajaxification, right? New word, I know. I'm full of new words, and my eyes are brown. The tool is going to miss stuff. Plus, forget the tool. Even if the tool can handle Ajax, even if the tool can handle the XHR request, even if the tool can process all that client-side code, when we start to talk about the business logic that's handed to the client, the tool doesn't know how to process that. That is something that we have to deal with manually. Very similarly to mapping, we have to use the brains God gave us. It's always what my grandmother said to me, right? Use the brains God gave you. Just look at this. She obviously wasn't talking about me hacking into websites, but I think it relates. She should be horrified to hear that I was a hacker, right? Ah, my poor grandson. Loved my grandmother to death. She was not technical. She was the lady that would wash paper plates in the dishwasher and then not know where they went. The little paper, you know, the Scott paper plates or whatever, no coating or anything. She put them in the dishwasher, run it. She didn't understand that, you know, once a week, that crud she was cleaning out of the bottom of her dishwasher were the paper plates. She was a wonderful woman, but a little slow. And discovery changes, right?